Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. I am joined by my lovely co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Dorothy, I rarely say I'm Steve Kramer, right? Since we're going to talk about objectification, should I objectify myself? Listeners, we are going to continue our discussion of non-duality. We're spending the entire month talking about this concept. And on this particular show, we are going to talk about objectification and its consequences. Dorothy, I'm looking forward to this conversation. As usual, you have a few quotes for us, yes, and that will, I think, help us sort of unfold this topic.
Sure. Glad to, Steve. I just wanted to comment first. I think one of the reasons why we're looking at these various topics, we looked at bigotry, we're looking at objectification, is to help ourselves recognize when we are being dualistic, because it's so embedded in the way in which we experience the world, even though it's an illusion. So I really look forward to this week again. I found three quotes that I thought they're relevant to the types of objectification that we're going to be talking about today. The first one is, a stereotype may be negative or positive, but even positive stereotypes present two problems. They are cliches, and they present a human being as far more simple and uniform than any human being actually is. I think that really captures the whole concept of stereotyping.
Absolutely. And this idea of needing to go deeper and surface,
yes,
which we'll cover quite a bit today.
Yes, yes. The second one is an interesting one. It's women are also property in our Bible. That's the Christian Bible being referenced. Adultery is a property crime in the Old Testament, not a sex crime. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Very.
And then in relation to the dismissiveness that we're going to be discussing, people who don't appreciate your presence only deserve your absence.
Mm, that one's very interesting. And
yeah,
I'd love to add to that, which just popped in my mind as I was listening to that. You know, I think we can't help but mention that this is the year anniversary of the tragedy, you know, that was Charlottesville last year, where you know, an anti-racism activist was killed, and this week, you know, marks that anniversary. And I think it's interesting in two ways, that quote. I was just reading an article about several of the key players that were brought to the forefront in this sort of white supremacist movement. And in the year that has passed, many of them have removed themselves from the movement, have removed themselves from being in the public eye, and many have retreated in a way. And it reminds me that in the long run, those who don't appreciate your presence indeed deserve only your absence, and that being the absence of community and the absence of really positive people. But in that instance, people had to be present, and we saw in this, in the rallies of the past weekend, people being present to say, you know, I don't necessarily agree. So I think we're going to talk about that as well. But certainly so many people objectified a year ago, you know, in that instance of this creating this duality of us versus them and calling people out, seeing them for only the color of their skin or their sexual orientation or their religion. So indeed, objectification, an issue, right?
Well, it was interesting. The MSNBC ran a documentary this past weekend. I believe it was called Breaking Hate. And it was about a man who used to belong to one of the white supremacist groups that was very active and left. And his life's work now is helping others break free of that. And his comment was that it's really not about ideology, although there's the slogans and all of that. It's about feeling disconnected and like you don't belong. And part of what he does, and they showed in the documentary one example of his bringing one of the people who had been marching, you know, as a white supremacist last year, to meet with Heather's mother, the young woman who was killed, and to talk with her. And the man was very hesitant initially because he thought, well, she'll just hate me. But, you know, she was very gracious, you know, and she listened carefully to where he was coming from and what his struggle had been. And it was a really good example of how what breaks down hate, what breaks down that objectification is actually getting to know people, real people.
Yes.
And not just seeing them as a collection of certain traits that you then label as dangerous or hateful.
Beautiful. I love a bit of optimism, you know, because it seems these are such chaotic times, but time and time again, we see these instances where perhaps we are learning, you know, from this chaos and learning from our seeing the nonsensical nature of duality and division, you know.
Yeah, I know, Steve, but I'm gonna put in a little bit of a cautionary note, because the other thing that was commented on in this documentary, which was really interesting and relates to what you were saying just before, is that the white supremacist groups are learning that they are more successful if they go underground, so to speak. They they were saying, you know, they turn in their swastikas for suits. You know, they look like everybody else. They're more likely to be able to recruit if they don't look so different. So the apps, and that was partly a commentary on what happened in Washington, D.C., where so few showed up, it doesn't mean that they've gone away. It doesn't
right.
mean that this has stopped.
It means
they've found they're trying a different strategy.
Right. Isn't it interesting, though, that in a sense they are hiding behind the surface once again? You know, we see this idea of putting on a suit so as to not reveal. And I believe that we will be talking over the next 2 weeks and you know, about really going beneath and really get to know another human being and reveal their mm-hmm. truth. And if that truth is that what lies underneath that suit is actually, you know, harm, and the intent to harm, it must be revealed. It must
mm-hmm.
be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to just for a second talk about just the meaning of objectification, you know, just because that helps me just in pondering objectification itself. So I just have a couple just simple dictionary definitions, which reveal quite a bit. The first is the action of degrading someone to the status of a mere object. So we saw that for sure. That's what's so apparent in the second quote about adultery is a property crime, that a person is an object that we can own or that we can sell quite scary. And the second, and we see this sort of certainly these days in the objectification of women, the Me Too movement and women as sexual possessions, the expression of something abstract in a concrete form. That's the second definition. It always seems to be a reduction, something down, like bringing it down to its form alone. And so we've got to get beyond that. That's what we keep talking about. We've talked about it this entire season of the radio show, which is, you know, this move away from materialism and to seeing really the complexity of life itself and creating reverence for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. One of the things that that I want to just put on the table is a cautionary note, is we often objectify simply as a way of handling data efficiently. You know, we talked at the beginning of this month about how the whole idea of dualistic thinking has sprung in part from the process of saying, you know, will I pay attention to this or not? Will I, you know, and that kind of sorting of stimuli that come in. And so objectification is a way of doing that. You don't have to attend to the complexity of the individual, of who they really are, the digging deep, as you were saying, Steve. Instead, we just have this surface categorization. And it also, one of the dynamics that we need to be careful about is we can use objectification to kind of retrofit a justification onto our emotions. So if we're feeling uncomfortable, if we're feeling uncertain, then we project, you know, a stereotype onto somebody else and can believe that they're causing our feeling, and which isn't true. It's our feeling. But these are all processes that we internalize, and if we don't bring them into our awareness, we can't change them.
Indeed, and you can see how it really is about labeling. It's like our mind just wants to label so that we can feel safe, you know. You realize that so much of even what was behind Charlottesville comes down to fear and wanting to label, to put something in its place. So then from there, you can do something with it, you know, if you will, which is what you were talking about, the mind. And you see that when we say, you know, I've got an objective. This is my objective. You can feel the sort of harsh pointedness of an objective means this is my goal and I'm going to do it. There's like a force or a will behind it. So there is a bit of a harshness to objectifying, and even to having an objective feels a little more cold than saying it's my intention, you know, which feels a little looser and more process oriented, where objective is this to reduce to a thing.
Well, and I think you were saying it helps us feel safe. One of the dynamics that comes into play is it can make us feel superior, right? I'm better than this other entity that I'm objectifying in this way. Right. And looking for that kind of, you know, feeling of being okay outside ourselves always runs us into trouble. We have to find that within ourselves instead.
Well, and you see that it just reduces it to an us versus them, you know, as opposed to, and, you know, to this sense of being connected and that we all can be a part of this. Dorothy, we're already at our first break. Time flies.
Oh, my goodness.
In conversation. So, listeners, stick with us. We'll be back after these messages.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. We're so glad you're with us. Just want to take a moment to tell you a bit about our organizations. Dorothy and I are both associated with nonprofits that have come together to create Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy, do you want to tell listeners a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies?
Absolutely. Listeners, you can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. The School for Esoteric Studies provides training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they want to deepen. We do this through meditation, study, and service. And if you are interested in that, please look at our website and contact us. We are also, we run a series of group activities, group meditation activities, and we also purposely look for collaborators, other like-minded groups that we can enter into initiatives with. And so if you belong to such a group, again, please look at the website, esotericstudies.net, and contact us. Spirit Fire is one of the organizations that we have a conscious collaboration with, and it's just wonderful. And Spirit Fire Radio is the consequence of that collaboration. So thank you, Steve, for the opportunity to work together.
Indeed. I love every minute of it, Dorothy. So Spirit Fire is an educational nonprofit as well. We are focused on three objectives, and that is meditation, study, and service. We've got a meditation center in Western Massachusetts with online classes and an online meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness and wonderful meditation retreats that support that online practice. And you can find out more about us at spiritfire.com. Dorothy, I love the word esoteric, right? I mean, this really does mean to reveal that which is veiled, right? It seems appropriate.
Yes.
As we talk about going beneath the surface. One thing, Dorothy, that stands out to me, which I find so interesting in our modern world, and so many of my friends, as they text me, they will often use emojis of themselves to sort of, express what they're feeling. I find it so interesting. You know, an emoji is this sort of caricature, this cartoon caricature of yourself. So it seems that we not only objectify each other, but we look to objectify ourselves these days more than ever to sort of bring attention to ourselves, reducing ourselves. If you've ever done that, Dorothy, creating this cartoon character of yourself, you've got a picture, you know, what do I look like? How would people want to see me? It's quite the interesting process. And what it does is it just simplifies ourselves. And here we choose from 12 reactions. And it seems that there is this trend to really oversimplify the complexity of even who we are and the complexity of our relationships. And I was just reading a really interesting article in Esquire magazine about social media and about stories, which is an Instagram feature that allows you to put up, you know, a 30-second little video and of what you're doing right now and project that out for all the world to see. It's interesting. They were saying that 65% of millennials upload holiday photographs specifically to make others envious. And a third of them intentionally post misleading photos to make their holidays seem better than it is. So in a sense, we're creating this illusion of who we are and what we're experiencing. And I just find it so interesting that, as always we say often on this show, is that it's got to start with ourselves. So if we're really in the habit of objectifying ourselves, how can we not objectify each other?
Very interesting.
You know, keep the picture of yourself. Make phone calls.
Take people out for coffee.
Yeah, better yet, I was thinking just that, Dorothy, right? Get together in person.
Right. One of the ways in which we objectify that we've referenced just briefly before is stereotyping. And this is so front and center right now in the political arena. That's what forms the hate groups, right, is stereotyping along with bigotry. But the in terms of how we operate functionally, we do two types of stereotyping. One is we decide that a particular group has traits that are common to them, like, you know, all Asians are good at math, all Blacks have rhythm, that kind of thing, which yeah. is maybe true of some people, but it's certainly not true of everybody. But this homogeneity that we attribute to what's known as the out-group, you know, not our in-group, but the out-group, is a common way of objectifying and simplifying, you know, as we were talking about before the break. But then we move on to prescriptive stereotyping, which is that we assume that the stereotypes dictate how people should behave. So it's not just describing traits, but how they behave. And one of the groups that gets caught in this the most is, you know, women, that women are supposed to be nurturing, maternal, blah, blah, blah. And so if a woman acts in a way that is different from that, then there are problems. And I may have shared this last year, but I'd like to just quickly share this incident that I had. I was teaching at the University of Arizona, and I was asked to do a special course with the social work students on sexual stereotyping and how it played into their professional lives. And so I entered the classroom, and in the front row, there's these couple of guys, and you know they were, you could tell from their posture that they were ready to resist whatever was going to come up in this particular class. And so I did a quick role play. I had one of them be a woman coming in for assistance, and the other one be her coach as to how she should behave, and then the third one be the social worker that was working with them. And we only got a few minutes, maybe even a minute into the role play, when the one who was the coach just threw up his hands. He says, "There's no way that I can get this woman," you know, referring to the man playing the role of woman, to be seen respectfully, because if she stands up for herself, she's going to be seen as aggressive. And it's like he got it right there in that moment, what the whole dynamic was of prescriptive stereotypes. And it's, we have other groups. We've had commentary in the media recently about comments that are made about the intelligence level of persons from people of color. And these are things, they're so common in our environment. We need to be really on guard and really, really make that effort to get to know the person behind the stereotype.
And I think it's worth noting that that can really be challenging because it's so pervasive culturally. And we've talked often about energy following thought. We've talked about thought forms, that they exist as things in our, you know, in our energetic environment. And so as we say this again and again, as we even project it verbally or even non-verbally, we actually condition people how to behave. You know, I mean, we actually become that because we are in this sea of, you know, of this thought form and of this sort of leading us in that direction. So, you know, we really have to look at ourselves, at the way we perceive, at the way we think, because stereotypes come from somewhere. We learn them. You know,
and we have to be aware that this is a dynamic that can snap into existence very quickly. You know, if you read in the literature, there are all kinds of examples of, you know, even in grade school, of for example, teachers trying this out, you know, to demonstrate to students, dividing students into two groups, like those with brown eyes, those with blue eyes. I mean, what possible difference can that make? And soon enough, you know, very soon, suddenly these groups are aggressively competitive with each other and seeing the other group as terrible, you know, not okay in many ways. So So it's very, very easy to fall into this dynamic. We just need to be careful about it.
Yes, very much so. I have a brother who sounds a lot like me. And in school, I remember constantly, my brother was in high school. He's 3 years ahead of me. And as soon as I showed up, he was a senior, I was a freshman, and I was expected to be just like him. You know, he was, he's very good looking. He's very charming. He was a star athlete. He was the top of his class in terms of, grades. He was the valedictorian. I mean, this is like, these are standards, right? And you realize that you're even stereotyped in that way. Like, how are you like your brother, as opposed to how are you not like your brother in a positive way? And so it took so long just to sort of undo these assumptions that I was just like him. So we see it in so many different ways, you know, the ways we want to box someone in, you know.
And then what happens is, you know, when we create this in-group, out-group dynamic, which I personally believe is what holds violence in place, unless we stop this, we're never going to resolve violence. Then we start to denigrate, you know, the out-group so that we feel more superior. And I was really struck this past week. Vice President Pence announced that the U.S. was going to be starting a space force as another arm of the U.S. military. Of course, this has to go through congressional approval and all of that. But anyway, and the rationale that he gave was the U.S. must dominate in space. Why? Yes. And what I immediately flashed on, Steve, was my experience of going to Antarctica a couple of years ago. And one of the stops that we made, you know, in addition to looking at the wildlife and the wonderful icebergs, was at one of the research stations. I think it was the Ukrainian, but anyway, it was in talking to the scientists there, they said that there were scientists in Antarctica from 53 different countries at that point in time. There may be more now. And every day they all uploaded their research findings to a common research base, so that they could collaborate together in the research that they were doing. And I thought, isn't this interesting that here in this remote part of the world, all of these countries are collaborating, and yet in other parts of the world, we have wars, and now the vice president is saying we have to take on wars in space.
Yeah, it makes you think, when are we going to pull out of the International Space Station? You know? Wow, draw that line. Let's hope not. Dorothy, we're at a break, so we will be back just after these messages. Stick with us, listeners.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to our month-long theme. We're talking about non-duality. And Dorothy, I really appreciated that story about, the researchers uploading to, a common research hub example of just cooperation and co-creation and collaboration. I'd love to hear it anytime it comes up. You see so much in our culture here in the U.S., this idea of the U.S. and so many moves to sort of separate us from the other, as opposed to collaborating, but just sort of this idea of making ourselves great, making ourselves stand out. I also have been thinking about an experience many years ago that I had in New York City that I'd love to just bring up for a moment, Dorothy. When I lived in New York City during the height of the AIDS crisis, which was a really scary time, and there in the late 80s and early 90s, there wasn't much help for somebody who was diagnosed with HIV or AIDS. And you would often see friends, a few weeks would pass and this person just looked completely different. It was just scary, like almost living in wartime. And there seemed to be this interesting response to this idea of looking or appearing to be sickly, and that then being stereotyped or being labeled as being somebody who was sick. And you saw that so many men in the gay community started doing steroids. It was this direct reaction to looking like you were wasting and pumping themselves up and having this huge, like massive body. I mean, some of these guys just look like action figures. And people would shave the hair on their chest, so on their whole body, so you could see the ripples of their muscles, all to look healthy, all to look beautiful, in a direct response, to being labeled, to being stereotyped as being sick. And in a sense, they became their own stereotype. So once again, this idea of objectifying ourselves in this response to separate ourselves from being labeled or being an idea or being, in that instance, which was, really being persecuted or being judged so just interesting the ways in which we objectify as a way to sometimes put ourselves in a box to fit in or to really differentiate ourselves from another, and dangerous foray. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And So I'd like to turn us for a moment to another form of objectification, which is dismissiveness or treating others as though they are invisible. So instead of treating them as though they are, they only have one common one characteristic, which is common of their group, we literally don't see them. And there's this movie, I've mentioned it before, Time Out of Mind, which came out in 2015, starring Richard Gere. It was about homelessness on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And Gere said, was interviewed about playing the part of this homeless man. And he said that the production company hadn't been sure that he could actually do this because he's so well known as an actor. But he sat on the sidewalk for 45 minutes, you know, dressed as a homeless man with a cup or cap out in front of him. And nobody recognized him. In fact, nobody looked at him. And he said it was the most chilling, soul-destroying experience of his life, to be completely invisible to passersby because they wanted to dissociate themselves from someone who was in that kind of difficulty. I mean, we have this formalized in practices of shunning, you know, other ways of marginalizing people. But it's very, it's not just that it's demeaning, it is emotionally damaging, not only to the people who are being shunned, but the people who are doing it. And I'd like to share one example in that regard, Steve. This is a personal example where my mother, who died several years ago, had been in a relationship with a woman for 40 years, a very meaningful, you know, very close relationship. And her partner just died recently. And at the memorial service, the daughters of the woman who had organized the memorial service did not mention my mother or the relationship at all. It was completely invisible. You know, talk about dismissive, completely absent. And the thing that struck me was, I mean, not only did they dishonor their, you know, this large part of their mother's life, but they themselves missed the opportunity or were depriving themselves of the opportunity to feel the great love that my mother had for them. You know, by dismissing her from their lives, they couldn't connect then to this wonderful well of love. And my mother was a very, very loving person who had played quite an important part in their life.
Wow. And also, you know, not showing the complexity and the beauty and the dynamic life that she lived. You know, you see how, in a sense, it is really a reduction of her life. And you can feel, you know, I'm sorry that you experienced that, because that, is quite a shame for all involved. And you can see how limiting that is. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'd like to give just a couple of other examples. I know you've got some that are also, I think, going to be very meaningful. One is, I went to an international conference a couple months ago, and I've been having more and more difficulty with my mobility from osteoarthritis. And there was a lot of distance to be covered, at the conference facilities and stuff. So I rented a wheelchair that my partner, you know, helped me with. And I've gone to many, many conferences in my life. Yeah, I've been keynote speakers. And at this conference, we got to the first coffee break. And my partner helped me out to where everybody was gathered around having coffee and stuff. And we went up to the first group, you know, to say hi and engage. And I said hi, and what they did was they moved aside so that the wheelchair could go by. And that happened over and over and over again. None of the groups recognized that I was actually trying to engage with them. They thought that I was simply waiting for them to make a passage, you know, to go past. And I felt really diminished by it. It was a very difficult feeling.
It brings time again, another experience. I'm sorry you experienced that. It reveals much though about our human nature. You know, my mom had brain surgery when I was an infant, and I grew up with her seeing double and having trouble with her balance as a result of that brain surgery. And she always had to go down the steps by sitting down. She could go upstairs fine, but down steps. And I remember so many instances at the mall or back in the day when you had stairs at a mall or in school at school functions where we were around parents and our peers, and my mom going down the stairs of our school on her butt, you know, and people would often look at her very strange or not say anything. And it was usually little kids that would say, "Hey, why are you going down the stairs like that?" And she would make fun and basically just, you know, really say it was better than rolling down the stairs. But so many people that would really almost avoid her or avoid us and actually go out of their way to, it would become quite awkward when really people could engage, you know, it was really not such a strange thing. And it makes me think of the Richard Gere scenario is so similar that in New York City, you are often confronted with people who are, you know, less advantageous than you, often with homeless people or even people who are having a really rough time even in the moment. There's this thing about New York City, you know, human beings are just pressed up against each other and our experiences are really in each other's field of experience in ways that a lot of other people don't realize. And, you know, I think that we sort of have a tendency to distance ourselves from somebody who is disadvantaged or different than us because if they're in that situation, we don't want to empathize. Whether we just in New York, you know, you got to go where you got to go. You can't be distracted. That you to engage would to bring out these empathetic feelings. It is then an engagement and becomes our responsibility. And if we're going to move on, we want to avoid this guilt of feeling like we're not helping them. And in a sense, then we're dismissing them. We are objectifying them. And I sense that is what happened to you as you were in the wheelchair was happened what would happen to my mom. And we for some reason shy away from empathy. You know, I don't know why that is. It's that somehow we feel bad and we label that as this is a bad situation. But in my mom's situation and certainly in your situation, the wheelchair was a great service to you, you know, and we somehow take it on or feel that it is going to be negative or impact us negatively. And so we avoid it. And it's a shame, you know, that we don't engage and just come together and experience it together.
Well you were sharing the other day that you had friends, doctors who were saying that they couldn't engage, you know, in an environment where they only, you know, they had to see four people in 30 minutes. You know, they didn't have time to really be that involved. To me, it's about rapport skills and being willing to be in rapport with someone else. Because I have a situation where every 3 months I need to have a very short procedure. It's literally less than a minute. And my doctor, you know, knows how to do it. But other people in the clinic don't. So if I go in, if I have to go on a day when I can't actually get an appointment with him, then I will get an appointment with the nurse practitioner who doesn't know how to do the procedure, who will then slip into my doctor's office and he'll come, you know, just for the minute that it takes to do the procedure. So this is a very short period of time, Steve, but he always establishes rapport with me.
Yeah.
I always feel seen by him. And he, as he's doing it, he'll say, "Yeah, so, you know, what's new in your life? You know, what's got you excited these days, or whatever it is. But he is present with me for that short period of time, and it makes all the difference.
Yes, and it really is the energy we bring to something. You know, it is our intention, because certainly we can pass somebody who is homeless on a bench like Richard Gere, or you know, we can look them in the eyes with a smile, with a warm heart, and give them all that we have available to us in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be a sit down and solve their life's problems, or it doesn't have to be getting you out of the wheelchair or making my mom able to walk again. It can be just sharing the heart and sharing a smile.
Right.
And, hello, I see you. And I'm enjoying seeing you. Can be that easy. Dorothy, we're at a break.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll be right back after these words.
How powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Tune in to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Megan will be raising the universal consciousness by empowering listeners with their own inner strength, working past trauma and abuse. Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Tune in every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. For more information about Megan and her work, visit enterthelightllc.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, Navigating Through Life's Transitions with Shelley Ryan, the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. This show, we are talking about objectification. We're going to continue that conversation. Dorothy, I think it's always important to sort of bring it to our real lives, our real world day to day. You know, how do we recognize objectification? If we are objectifying someone, or if they are objectifying us, how do we see it, and perhaps even what to do in that moment? Any thoughts off the top of your head right away?
Well, the core dynamic when we're talking about objectification is that we see somebody else only for how they are useful to us. Mm. And that's the dynamic, I think, that, you know, that we need to begin to be aware of. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't ask someone to be helpful to us, but it really is just reducing the person to only what they can do for us. We have extreme examples of this, which unfortunately people tend to overlook. We have human trafficking, which is at least 38 million people a year, and that includes at least 500,000 in the United States. So it's not just someplace else in the world. We have slave trade is supposed to be prohibited, and yet we have forced labor. We have the whole issue of pornography. There's this very disturbing series of studies about how young males who have been viewing hardcore porn online are finding it very difficult to actually have a real-life personal relationship with somebody else because they're just into that, you know, the use for sexual gratification. So those are, if we start to pay attention, there are lots of different examples around us. And it's really thinking in ourselves. I think it gets back to what you started the show off with, of we have got to be present with other people. We have got to value getting to know somebody for themselves and respecting them and treating them with dignity.
And just really watching generalizations. Whenever we make a generalization about another person, we are really limiting the opportunity to get to know them, to get to, mm-hmm. you know, really create any sort of relationship. We've brought this up almost every week, but we see it, you know, with this horrible instance with these immigrant children. And even that, to just say immigrant children limits them, it labels them. It's hard not to do it because we want to create a context in a conversation, but we've just got to really watch the way we go about it. Like, for instance, it might have even been more helpful for me to say the children that were taken from their caregivers or parents at the border who were, looking for asylum right there. I just corrected myself. You know, what I did was stereotype them. And it is second nature. So we've got to catch ourselves. We've really got to be aware of doing that time and time again in our mind, in our speech, and in our actions. Because as we say, it really is everywhere. Indeed.
Right. And we have, with just staying with those children for a moment, I mean, we have now documented instances of physical and sexual abuse, of the complete misuse of psychotropic medication to keep them under control, just the treatment in cages. You know, it's horrifying. If we actually allow ourselves to empathize with these children. And then we have government officials saying, well, it's really like summer camp.
Yeah.
And there was one interaction, you may remember what it was, but it was on the news, where an official saying that was confronted by someone saying, would you send your child to that summer camp?
Right. I mean, well, it's so ridiculous to say that. But you see once again that we're using these words to create a visualization, like an illusion in somebody's mind. And we just see that so much these days, and especially in politics, of mental manipulation. So we use these ways, you know, to sort of in a way objectify that experience as being like summer camp, whereas it is so far from it. You only have to ponder it for a moment, scratch beneath the surface, mm-hmm. to see that there's no comparison whatsoever. And Dorothy, what I think about is, you know, also having empathy for the people who are following these orders, you know, to be under the illusion and so believing these stereotypes that you have hardened your heart, that you have created such a wall, you know, around your heart that you could possibly, I'm sure take a crying child physically from the parent or the guardian and move them into a separate space. Just that moment alone, it shows the ways in which objectification, of stereotyping, of bigotry, actually the power that can have over our mind and its capacity to harden our hearts and disconnect us from another human being, because it must be so strong to be able to follow those orders and see mm-hmm. them through. You know, you really have got to have really quite the hardened heart indeed.
Well, fortunately, we have some people in the system, like the judge who ordered that plane turned around because a woman and her daughter, whose asylum claim was in the process of being heard by a court, had been taken by U.S. officials and put on a plane out of the country, not even being allowed to complete that process. So he just had the plane turned around, which was fantastic. But I want to mention a different aspect of this, which is a bit more subtle and is something that, again, we need to be alert to in ourselves, and that is the psychological abuse that can come from objectification. And what I mean by that is using somebody else to feel good. Yep. And so we yell at the other person just to let off steam. You know, I had someone in my family, who in my extended family, who was being very verbally abusive to me, and when I tried to stop it, she just said, "I don't care. This makes me feel better, right?" And she just kept right on going, or saying the other person is worthless in order to make ourselves feel better. So that is as much that is objectification also, the using somebody else for our own benefit.
Yeah, it is moving beyond this really sense of selfishness, that to lead your life as if, and calling that out, you know, as if that which I want is of paramount and everything else goes by the wayside. Really, the first step in our spiritual awakening is just to recognize that the world exists beyond ourselves and to get to know another, see how we are interconnected. Yeah.
And remember that we are all part of a whole.
Yeah.
You know, we are not, that is the fundamental dynamic that we're getting at this month, is really expanding on the idea that there is not separation. We may be individualistic in certain ways, but we are all connected. Our energy fields are all connected. Whatever we think, whatever we do, affects other people. We don't exist in a vacuum.
That duality is a myth, as we said.
That's right.
One. So, Dorothy, we are totally at the end of the show. Listeners, you know, we are going to talk about this subject next week once again, and we're going to talk about ways in which we can move beyond duality. So certainly we hope you'll join us. Yes, right, Dorothy, as we continue
Absolutely.
This conversation. Listeners, it's been a pleasure. Dorothy, it's been a pleasure, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.